You won't break my soul. You won't break my soul.
You won't break my soul.
Na 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 diva is a female version of a hustler. Na 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 diva is a female version of a hustler. Of a hustler. Stop the track. Won't you take that? Da na 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 na. Love on top, baby. What's another one? What I'm like blanking on all of them.
You were just there.
I know.
You were literally
I'm
there.
I'm scooped up. I'm scooped up, scooped out. It was so good.
I'm so excited. I can't believe I have to wait like 6 more weeks before I can see her. She has to do like 700 shows between when you saw her and when I will.
I think the part where I truly lost my mind was when the songwriting on Cuff It's interesting. I can't remember what this part of the song is, but it's the hypersonic sex erotic on my body. Boy, you got it. Hit them jollocks while I ride it. Got me acting hell.
It just like hits the brain.
So excited. So exotic. I'm a seasoned professional. Squeeze it. Don't let it go.
You had good seats too.
No self-control.
Ugh.
When she was doing that, me and Heron, who I went with, lost our minds. I mean, that's my favorite part of the song, but also just like, it's like my favorite song on the album, maybe.
Cuff It?
Yeah, Cuff It's definitely, I think, my favorite song on the album. Cuff It and Church Girl. But the Church Girl, it was not like, it was a good mix of Church Girl, but I was like, oh, it was pretty good. It was in the like third act of the show. But I think my favorite looks were definitely during Cuff It and Break My Soul. That was the same act. And then the look that she had on before the final act. Well, she had two final act looks. Like she had so many outfits.
But there was
this one when she's doing Virgo's Groove, where it's like a bodysuit. I posted this outfit on my Twitter. It's like one of those bodysuits. Glittered rhinestone to the gods, and then it has the hands all over the bodysuit.
Oh yeah,
that are like wrapping around her body, and then like the hands going up her legs, and on the hands, all the hands that were sewn into the bodysuit had acrylic nails on, and then the gloves that she had on over the bodysuit also had acrylic nails on the gloves. Amazing. And all the gloves that she had in the show had acrylic nails on, and I was like, she's a fucking artist. Okay, she's a fucking artist.
This shit is filmed in different areas.
And then my favorite part though of this was when, okay,
no spoilers,
just play it. No, I don't know if she's gonna say this at every show, so I'm just gonna say
sure. The set list is pretty consistent, right?
This ending credits was like tailored to what we were doing. Listen to what she says here. She literally is flying over the stage on wires like a fucking angel surrounded by glitter. And she points down at the crowd and she goes, please give it up for the dolls. And I was like, Beyonce, you have to stop. Like, you have to stop. I'm literally going to start crying. She opened with Tina Turner. I could have died.
Oh my God.
I could have died. I mean, well, she opened with Dangerously in Love and 1+1, and then she did Tina Turner. I can't remember the exact order of it. She started with Dangerously in Love, though, which is like one of my favorite Beyonce songs.
I mean, it's always fun.
And she did a lot of Dangerously in Love, and then she did a lot of Four, too. She was like, this is a Four tour. Secret Four tour. She's like, I didn't really tour Four, so we are going to do Four.
Hell yes.
But when she did Tina, she was like, you know, I want to like give this performance, like I want to do this for Tina. I like lost it. I started crying. Like I so could see loudly. Why. It was so good.
Beautifully
and
done,
the cover that she does of River Deep Mountain High is like incredible. And then she disappeared. She was her own opener, by the way, which is my favorite part of the tour. Oh,
yeah, of course.
She opens the show for herself and then goes away, and then the actual show starts. Like she was the warm-up for herself. She like comes out, she has Dangerously in Love, 1+1, and then 1+1 wasn't in the opening. She has Dangerously in Love and then River Deep Mountain High. She's like, thanks so much for this supporting small business, this small opening act, Beyonce Knowles Carter, and then disappears, and then show starts, and I won't spoil it. When you do go and see it, though, we have to talk about it for real.
I know you sent me like 20 videos, and I was like, I literally want to watch these so bad. I was just going through the thumbnails, was like a treat in itself. Yeah. I was like, I can't.
But though, the outfit that she wore for Cuff It and for Break My Soul was, I mean, who knows if it's going to be the same one, so you can always go back and look, but it was like this pink number that was just,
you never
like,
know.
Ugh. And then she brought the bee costume back, which I was so excited about for America Has a Problem. And oh my God, can I just say, the people that hate on Blue, you're fucking racist and evil.
Yeah,
why are you bullying a child? Fuck off. Like, die then, if that's how you feel. She was so good. She was so good.
What else? Yeah.
Like, considering her age, like, so good.
Yeah, isn't she like 12 now?
I think she's 12. Wasn't she born in
2009? I remember Beyonce announced her pregnancy, I think 2009, right?
Blue Ivy pregnancy. Blue Ivy age. 11. She's 11. Yeah, she's like 11 or 12. Wow. Yeah.
Damn.
She was born 2012, 01, 07. Okay, so I was like almost there. Yeah, she was born 2012.
Wow, that's crazy.
Guys, she's 11. What the fuck do you think you're doing making fun of an 11-year-old, you fucking evil weirdos.
Like, you should be lucky to see her.
She was so good. Also, her photo on Wikipedia now is from the tour, which is like so cute. And you could just tell, like, I think the part that was so good about Blue Ivy being there is you could see how much Beyonce lights up about her children and how like proud she was that like Blue is like hitting the choreo.
I mean,
didn't mess up once.
Imagine like, getting in front of a stage like that at 11.
At 11? No.
Right.
No. Nepo
only
babies,
like 80,000 people.
Famously, our feelings on Nepo babies are very well known, but Blue Ivy doesn't count as a Nepo baby. So sorry. Like, I'm sorry when your parents are Beyonce and Jay-Z, like, you're not a Nepo baby. Like, that's
at that
like,
point, you actually might have divine talent.
Like, yeah. Like, sorry. So it was just so good. Everything about it. I cried like so many times. And also, I got really good seats with my friend Heron. Shout out to Heron who got us the seats.
Yeah, your seats were killer.
We were on the upper level and then we were dead center and we were on the aisle. So we could just like kind of have a little bit more space, you know, because we weren't like cramped into the middle of it.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I was on the aisle side, so I was up the whole time. I was fully freaking out.
People sit at these concerts, which is crazy.
There was this group of
like girls. You're not a real fan if you're sitting the whole time. Like,
how do I say this? There was some like people who were also probably at the Eras tour sat in front of us, and they sat for Diva. They sat for Cuff It. They sat for Energy. They were
criminal behavior
for Church Girl and Savage and 7-Eleven. She has 7-Eleven, by the way.
Oh my God.
Well, the dancers do 7-Eleven, but anyways.
Still, I don't care. That's insane. Like, give those tickets to people who actually want to be
there. Then, I'm not done. Then they stood up. What song do you think they stood up on?
Oh God, probably Halo or something.
No, worse.
What?
Love on Top. I was like,
but they didn't dance enough for 7-Eleven.
That's is enough. Meanwhile, me for the diva section, hitting all the choreo
like,
from the
popping
music
video. Your pussy.
I knew every single choreo. I knew all the choreo from Heartstill. Okay, I memorized it when it came out, and it's ingrained in my memory. And yes, I did it with Beyonce from the bleachers. Yes, I did, and you couldn't stop me for Church Girl, which is also one of my favorite songs on the album. Like, oh my God, fucking America Has a Problem. I like was fully at that point. I was,
no,
like,
that's like disassociation. Yeah.
Same with Summer Renaissance. Summer Renaissance was really good too. It was just all so good. Like, I say this all the time, and we both believe it. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably believe it too. And someone on our Patreon said it on the most recent episode of Beautiful Women Updates, which came out yesterday. We're recording a little bit later, and we'll get to why. That Beyonce is the most underrated artist of our time. And it's so true because like people say that she's great, but they don't really talk about how when she gets in front of a crowd, I have never seen someone as powerful as Beyonce that doesn't have to rely on like cheap marketing gimmicks like Taylor Swift, who is like,
oh my God, right?
An artist on a comparable tour right now. Not comparable artistically. I mean, comparable in terms of scale.
Definitely. Same stadiums.
Same stadiums, you know.
Where, more expensive.
You know, which is Taylor arguably. Had to indoctrinate all those fans into a literal cult, a marketing cult. And she had to find the people in this country that are the most gullible to good branding.
Were we just talking marketing. About how you can't trust the Taylor Swift stan? It's like you're a gullible, like
you're gullible. No, but
no Beyonce, taste having.
She is so powerful in front of a crowd, and her ability to command the soul attention of almost every single person in the
stadium. It's like superhuman ability.
And completely just dominate a space that large as just one person, despite all the dancers and all the extra stuff going on, is unreal. You guys, if you have seen this tour, you know what I am talking about. Like, there were moments where Heron and I, who are like huge Beyonce fans.
Yeah, you've been
and
to, like, I'm not talking about show.
Like, oh my God, like I loved Beyonce, the self-titled album. I loved, you know, Lemonade. I loved Renaissance. Like, I'm talking about, I know the exact outfit she wore on The View to promote B-Day. Okay. Like that kind of fan, right?
Exactly.
Like the kind of fan who didn't need Drag Race to tell me that her performance of Crazy in Love at the BET Awards is one of her best ever. Shout out Sasha Colby, by the way. That is a really good outfit. Like that kind of Beyonce fan where you like know the lore of Beyonce.
Yeah, I'm not even that deep in, but I know and respect. Yeah,
it's like that. There were these moments where she would just even be like she didn't really even have to say anything, but she would like look back at the crowd like, oh, y'all want to sing this part, right? Like she would like riff with the crowd. At certain points, she was like, oh, I can just go. Y'all seem to know these words just fine. Like when she did Love on Top, obviously everyone sang on beat, on pitch. Crazy. Guys, an entire stadium at fucking Lincoln Stadium, the Eagles arena for fucking football, the Eagles, you know, that's where she played at Lincoln. Everyone was on key. And she was like, at first you could tell she was going to sing along. And then she like stopped and she would only come in on like one or two words to like slightly pitch correct. Girl, everyone in that stadium, not only did they get the count right, but they also knew how many repetitions of the chorus there was before there was a key change.
There you go.
Did the key change on site. It's that good. There was this one part too where she would like do something, like she would flick her hair out of her face, and it was like she knew it looked really good what she just did, and she'd look into the camera like, like, did y'all see that? Did y'all see that? Right? Like, there were times of Heron and I were just shrieking with laughter because she's so funny and she's so good at what she does. And just watching her at Renaissance, I know I sound like a crazed stan right now, but like every tour I have ever been to with her, this is my third one, has just been so life changing. Like, she is the greatest living artist.
Well, and no, maybe that's one the of the greatest level, artists
ever in human history.
Like, it's like a staggeringly high level above staggering. The rest. Like, no, it's not like there's people nearby. Like, no, she's like multiple stories above.
Literally not a single person living on Earth, or maybe even in recent memory, that has achieved the level of artistic coherence, talent, integrity, and innovation that Beyonce has. I know everyone likes to riff and make jokes, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously we are not aligned politically, but it cannot be understated that she is the greatest. That is undebatable with me.
It really is. I do not want to go back and forth with people. At this point.
And listen, I'm somebody who like, Venus starts playing, I'm up out of the ground. I could be a pile of bones. I could literally be incinerated in a nuclear like bomb explosion, and my body would rematerialize.
The goo will start dancing.
And said do the entire Venus choreo, okay? From the art pop ball. It's that serious for me with Lady Gaga. But like, I saw the Enigma residency. Okay, you guys, like, I don't want to hear about it with these other pop stars. And lastly, I'm just going to say this. I promise this is the last thing I'm going to say about this. That lady is an emotional fucking terrorist. And once you see this tour, you are going to know what I mean. Because
it's a weapon.
I think her power comes from being a literal energy vampire in the best kind of way, where she is like, in that stadium, she's like, feed me your souls, like, feed me your energy, like, just draining us of our life force. And we do it willingly. Like, I came back, and for the last 2 days, I've been so destabilized from how good that tour was. And I've been seeing,
you're like, I've seen fruits so bountiful. I can't return to normal life.
There was this fucking faggot on TikTok.
Oh, was like, I was waiting. I was going to ask
that if you was like, this. And she does late and blah, 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 and she did four. I'm sorry. I will not hear four slayer.
You're like, I'm actually pro gun rights. Like,
I'm gonna
come and get you.
Literally to get you. Okay. How dare you?
You're saying she'd have an opener. The crowd needed to get ready. I'm like, the crowd doesn't need to get ready for Beyonce because they're ready like 6 months ahead of time. Okay.
You should know.
You're crazy.
Like, you didn't. I'm sorry. You didn't do the reading. Okay. I'm sorry. You didn't do the reading. Mm-hmm. And also, I am so sick of these fake fucking Beyonce stans getting on the internet and acting like they know fucking anything about Beyonce. Okay.
That's why I'm like, give your ticket to somebody else. It's ridiculous.
Literally.
You should have to like pass a quiz to get a Beyonce ticket.
Oh my God. Just.
Did you see that faggot on TikTok made a video about like getting aroused from these men at a locker room? And he thought it was two guys fucking, but it was actually like a dad helping his like disabled son put on clothing. He told this whole story. Everyone's like, why would you admit that?
Didn't he jerk off to it too?
He was just like, oh, I'm so aroused from these men making these sounds, this whole story. And then he was like, and it was actually just a man like helping his disabled son like change into something else. And I was like, the porn has rotted the brain.
No, Diva is a female version of a hustler. Dude, when she did 7-Eleven, I just have to say, it was literally like
tectonic.
Just like when the 7-Eleven, when you could hear me and Aaron
like
at each other,
one key drop.
I think I screamed, shut the fuck up, Beyonce. Like, I was like, shut the fuck up. I was so excited. Oh my God.
The mixing is so good.
My reaction to Cuff It was obscene. Like, I won't lie. Like, I was really freaking it in the bleachers, but like, I have no apologies. Like, I am there to have a good time. And the way that people would sit, like, I just am in my like eagle-eyed vision of the crowd. No. I would just be like, why are you sitting?
I don't know what's sitting? The point. Lily, barring like literally accessibility, like reasons, like I don't know why.
Yeah, no.
Of course.
I'm saying people that would like stand at the weirdest times, like
right.
Stand for Love on Top, but not stand for Savage. Unpack that. Unpack that. Maybe unpack that.
Oh my God.
Some of us hear Beyonce places other than weddings. Maybe that's something to think about.
Other than Peloton spin class.
You have been on vacay.
Yes.
How was it?
Twas in the mountains. Oh, it was amazing. I feel very rejuvenated, restored,
world tour.
Relaxed, beautiful. Oh yeah, show it off. We live.
That's my shirt. So you were in the mountains. You got a boat.
We had a boat. Yes, we had a boat moment. We had a nautical moment. Everyone.
I didn't know they gave gay people boats.
Well, we a straight guy drove it, so.
Oh, they like checked your permit.
They're like,
mama.
Yeah, we were at Lake Pinecrest. It was Gorgina. We got the boat so we could get away from the screaming families and children, which was the best decision ever.
Was there a lot of screaming families and children?
Well, like at the, you know, the entrance to the lake, it's all the people who like camp year round and like are just, yeah, there with their like 12 children and extended family. That's not the vibe for us. We are all adults who hate children. So that's why we got the boat. So we can literally take it across the entire lake and get our own little peninsula island area to set up for the day. So we can smoke our weed and have our drinks and make our food. And it was, yeah, it was amazing. So much sun exposure. I like don't go outside. So it was intense, but I didn't get sunburned once. And then the second day, this was where it was like magical. My, you know, Catalina, my friend, she had found this place before. It's not like it's an unknown place. Like you can look it up, but it's not the most obvious. It's basically 30 minutes outside Miwok Village area. And basically you hike for like 30, 45 minutes, to literally just a cave that has fresh water running through it and waterfalls in the cave. It's not huge. Like it's a very tall cave, but it's not very long, but you can literally swim from end to end and come out on another side with all these like pools and reservoirs and stuff.
Is this in the campground?
No, no, no. It's just literally out off the freeway, like 30 minutes, 40 minutes away.
Okay.
You have to drive all the way to it. And it's very unadvertised. Like you legitimately wouldn't know that that's what it is. And the hike is kind of treacherous too. It's like very steep and unforgiving, but thankfully we made it. And cause you know, Catalina, her boyfriend's blind and he has a seeing eye dog. So like we walked the dog, she was able to help him get down, which is really nice. But once you're there, it's like really cold water and the cave is like 50, 60 feet tall and you can really just lay on a float and like just look under and at it. I was like, this is perfect. Like this was amazing. So yeah, really good time. And then the Airbnb we had had a sickening view, but I will say one thing with Airbnbs. Has anyone ever had an Airbnb where the AC actually worked? I would love to know if that's actually possible. Because yet again, we were at an Airbnb where it's 95 degrees inside and the AC is on full blast. I will never understand why this happens everywhere I go at this point. Also, they like didn't really
did in Palm Springs. Remember that AC?
I was like, this is actually a health hazard to say you have AC in Palm Springs and it doesn't work. Like it's actually a health hazard.
The worst was the gay couple that owned that Airbnb that we went to. This was in like
2018. They're on my hit list.
This was in like 2018. Matt and I went to this Airbnb in Palm Springs with your partner and Catalina's partner and her other friend. And we get there and these like older gay couple that like own this house high in the hills of like the mountain.
It's literally in a mountain outside of Palm Springs. Yeah.
They had a pool and stuff. It was nice. It was like a gorgeous view.
It was pretty amazing.
They call it like the high desert or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not joking, you guys. This gay couple are in like bathing suits when we get there and like open t-shirts, you know, like Palm Springs vibes.
Yeah.
Older. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, the great part about being up in the high desert is there's no bugs. No bugs. And we're like, oh, wow, cool. That's actually kind of nice. And me like,
they mean like really? No mosquitoes maybe or something at like, most.
No bugs. Anyways, I go to bed that night. And I
y'all were in that casita up from hell.
That was not properly blocked off from the desert. We go in. And I shit you not. Roaches. Flying roaches just coming inside
like a hive.
Just flying roaches, scorpions, tarantulas. Remember the tarantula we
trapped
that underneath the thingy?
It literally was in our room
3 days.
Me and Pierce were like coming down off LSD, my partner and I, and it was like 3 a.m. and we're like, all right, time to finally go to bed, the night's ending. And we literally open our door and we're in like really just a bathing suit, you know, like have none of our shit with us, all in our room. And I opened the door to our room and a full tarantula, like the comically large sized tarantula, just runs under our feet into our bedroom. And thankfully my partner was able to get it with a bowl, but it was like a whole fucking ordeal.
You guys just left it trapped under the bowl.
It was sitting in a bowl under the heat for like 4 days and we released it. It was still alive. Fucking disgusting.
It was really bad.
Okay, but I remember also, speaking of the bugs there, and then we'll get back to the actual show that we have to record here. I remember, again, those guys were like, oh yeah, you guys are familiar with like the desert and like, you know, what it's like out here. And I've been to Palm Springs a million times as a kid and stuff, because I live in San Diego. It was very close and we had friends that lived out there. I was like, yeah. I did not realize that like you drop one piece of any food, any piece of sugary food, and there will be like 100 million ants on it, which is like whatever, they're just ants. But a cricket died in our bedroom and it was being dismembered in front of us live by a horde of ants. Like I was watching them carry the leg, ripping off the other legs. That was after the tarantula. I was like, we have to get out of here. But again, the AC wasn't working, so it was 100 degrees inside. Oh my god, and
when we were in the pool late at night and the bats would come swooping.
Oh, and like, yes.
Would hit us.
Drink the water.
Drink the water. They would come like, scoop. And like one bat like would hit me in the face by accident. Like, I guess
a little touch of rabies.
The water. I don't know what it was.
Well, because they would drink the water, but we'd be swimming, so they would just hit you on the way out.
I just thought about the sonar sound, the echolocation sound that they
made. Okay, so they also
clicking the clicking noise that you could feel like at the back of your spinal cord. Yes, oh god, oh god, it's such a shiver down my spine to think about it.
So guess what? We also had bats on this trip because when we were out in the patio deck, which was again the view was gorgeous. Like I was literally like we were almost crying. We're like, this is so amazing. We would just watch the sunset in silence and like cry. But then the bats would start and you would hear that like clicking sonar and like the chewing sound, and then they would literally fly above us. I would be like, whatever, like I'm just living.
No, but my friend Kalina was like, not like bats. Fucking mind. Nope, not a bat person. So we have some stuff to talk about that are gonna be skipped first off, so I'll get to the skips.
We got
notes this week,
good amount of skips.
So Joe Jonas needs lots of therapy after pooping in his white pants on stage. Corey Bierman claims Kim Zolciak gambled away $1.5 million during marriage in body cam footage. Brooks Marks says Mary Cosby wants to set him up with a really hot man in Italy. Brooks Marks, quote, I was told to go to the gym, get my hairline fixed, become a model. Well, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's no hope for Brooks Marks, then there's no hope for us. Tom Sandoval cries alone at Sir as Vanderpump Rules cast continues filming new season. Not cries alone.
The photo is pretty funny.
Raquel actually. Levis playing hardball with Bravo producers as contracts with filming starting wants as much money as possible. Okay, I want to actually talk about this one. Roni star Jessel Tonk throws up all over show's ritzy premiere party, forced to leave early.
It's kind of iconic.
She did it right on the carpet. This is from Page Six. Quote, she did it right on the carpet, one source shares, adding that she, quote, puked another time too. Two additional sources tell us that the fashion publicist went to a private bathroom away from the bash and vomited into the sink. We hear Tonk, 40, became nauseated and left the red carpet early before finally falling victim to her stomach shortly after Andy Cohen made his welcoming remarks. Oh my god, her dress that she's wearing.
I guess ripped to that dress, right?
She looked very pale. Weird, rude.
This dress is a lot to take in.
It's a lot. Okay, so when is it premiering?
It's this Sunday.
This Sunday, yeah.
I know. We'll have to watch. Okay,
then let's look at Tom Sandoval crying alone in the parking lot. Aw, are you crying?
Someone says he's dressed like a Disney Channel original movie villain. And
it's true.
Kills me. That back alley.
Is that Sheena?
Yes.
That's
she's like yelling at him, I think, while he's crying.
Are you crying? I love that we're returning to tradition of filming in the back alley at Sir.
But
my thing is, are they going to make them film together? Because it says here, Katie and Ariana were then photographed arriving at Sir.
Well, there's other footage of Tom and Tom together. They had like some fight or like he's argument at Tom.
But I'm saying if like he's at Sir while Katie and Ariana are at Sir, did they make them film together or was he like forced to stay out back and they were like, you have to leave because Ariana's coming?
I almost think it is something like that where it's like, we're going to keep you away for a minute and then maybe there'll be like a we have to get back together moment.
Did we get the part that they got nominated?
Oh, I forgot to add that note.
Let's talk about that right now. So Vanderpump Rules was nominated for 2 Emmys, I think. Vanderpump Rules Emmys. So let me get this from People. Okay, so it gets its first ever nomination. It's a one an Emmy nom. So on Wednesday, the announcements by the Emmy Awards said that, you know, the expected ones, Succession, White Lotus, and then VPR also locked down one of the nominations as well. No Real Housewives franchise has ever been nominated, which makes Vanderpump Rules,
which is fucked up.
Which began as a spinoff of Beverly Hills, even more momentous of an occasion. Again, getting this directly from People. Honestly, though, like, they did that. They all did that. And I also feel like we get to... I'll just say, I feel like we get to claim credit for that along with all the other Bravo universe people for making that show happen.
The amount of people have told us, and we're not even like, we're not even in the caliber of some of these big recap podcasts, obviously, because there's like 1 billion of them for Bravo, but even many people have come to us saying they've watched all 10 seasons of that show.
Yes.
To listen to our coverage of it.
Oh, we've had
people, like, so many people have said that.
Tweeted us being like, if it seems like I've disappeared from public life, it is because I am watching Vanderpump Rules thanks to eating for free. So just want to say we did that. Thank
you. You're welcome, Academy.
Me, Sheena, and Ariana. I honestly, I would like to think it was my Come On Everybody performance as Ariana Maddox.
Oh, absolutely.
Pushed this Emmy nomination over the edge for them. Like, I think my really humanistic portrayal of Ariana as a scorned woman convinced nominees that it was actually me. Step aside. Joan Summers, you know, made this right for them. So I'll take credit for this.
An honorary nomination for that performance as well.
So then The Flash, the last one we've got, is now the worst box office flop in superhero film history. And Warner Bros. Is set to lose $200 million on it. So just to get the numbers, because we are skipping this, it's going to make only $55 million. It only made $55 million at the box office for its debut,
and the budget was like hundreds of millions.
Has fallen since then 72.5%.
Well, because anyone that was going to see it saw it opening weekend, and nobody else cares after that.
Okay, so this is where the $200 million comes in. Again, studio numbers, this Hollywood accounting, $220 million plus $150 million in promos. Which, what, how, where did the $150 million in promos go? Because I did not see $150 million worth of promos. I did not. So it's, the domestic total now is $99 million. Once again, it's just seen these catastrophic drops, and it has surpassed Shazam Fury of the Gods in terms of floppiness. My thing with this, and again, we are skipping it, so we're not going to get too deep, but like, it's just crazy to me that David Zaslav was like, against every recommendation, against every inkling that any major publicist had, against all the opinion pieces and reporting and police cases, et cetera, pressed onward as hard as humanly possible to make this movie happen. And it's like, can you imagine if you lost someone $2,000, let alone $200,000, $20,000? Can you imagine if you lost your job personally? You were 100% responsible because of gross incompetence. That $20,000 just evaporated. Do you think you would have a good time at your job
at night?
What if you lost your job $200,000? I would be dead. I would be dead. Like, people would have showed up at my house, dismembered my body, and thrown me in a trunk if I lost $200,000. $2 million? Incinerated. You'd never find my body. If I lost $200 million, they would literally surgically erase me from history. Like, they would make it so that I never existed as a person. And David Zaslav's like, well, that's just life.
Can't wait to write off the royalties.
Also, we're going to scan all the actors, turn them into AI bots, and we're never going to pay anyone in Hollywood ever again.
I didn't add that in, but
okay, your current direction's not working. So you think your new big plan is going to be the one that works? Like, you really think now people are going to want to go see movies made by robots? Sure. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I'm not sure how much you want to talk about this, but I remember, I think it was right before I left for my trip or last week, I saw that obviously Gizmodo Media Group is doing AI articles and for like Jezebel and all the other sites. And it looked like some of the most hot garbage I've ever seen. Was even like, it couldn't even do like basic like ordering things correctly, like sentence structure, and yet they want to do like an actual physical movie written by AI and or actually physically produced by AI.
No sorry words. That happened, or happy for you. I'm not reading all that, babe. I'm not getting involved. Here's what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm doing me, JC style. I'm not getting involved. I'm not getting involved. I don't know what Geo Media is, so I just don't want to speak about things I don't know anything about.
Yeah. Valid.
I hope Jim Spanfeller shits his pants in public. So it'd be the least interesting thing to happen to him, I'm sure. So we have some actual notes. Let's talk about the SAG strike. What's going on there?
Yeah, SAG-AFTRA has officially started to strike, it seems. Hell fucking yeah, right? As like some of the biggest premieres are happening. So
yeah, if we have any SAG actors and like SAG represented people in our listener base who would like to talk to us, come on the show, et cetera, et cetera. Come on, tell us.
Please.
Email us. You can find us at eatingforfreepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, continue.
So again, this is from Variety. We have a few things about it, but this just gets started. one studio executive basically told Variety, quote, "You can't premiere movies anywhere without your stars. No stars, no movie. Fall festivals are fucked." This is specifically about the kind of Telluride, Toronto and your film festivals that are coming up.
Yeah, oh my God, if this kills TIFF, I'll...
parade in the streets. So SAG-AFTRA,
the TIFF industrial complex has been defeated.
Honestly, it's almost there after like COVID and everything else happening. Like, so obviously, as we mentioning, SAG and AFTRA have made it clear that its members are not to do any promotional activity around their movies until a new contract deal is reached and ratified. The first one that is coming up is the Venice Film Festival, which takes place on August 30th through September 9th. Obviously, if we cannot have any PR press events or any of the actors in those movies gathering, it's going to be basically a complete flop. Telluride apparently may be the least affected by SAG because of the and the WGA strike because there are no press conferences or second repeats that they do outside the venue. Of course, however, and we'll actually get into the exact list here. The rules that are shared by the unions are to, of course, not what was exactly here. They shared during a call with publicists earlier this week that studios cannot foot the bill to send them to the expensive film festivals, nor can stars attend the studio-sponsored parties. When it comes to Toronto International Film Festival, TIFF, obviously it's a pretty tailor-made launching pad for both consumers and award-friendly titles. TIFF will most likely be impacted if a deal isn't reached on both sides because without stars in attendance, sponsored photos and video studios will disappear and the media presence will basically kind of shrink pretty considerably.
Well, because there's nothing to do. I mean, you're going to go see the movie, but that's it.
It's like you're there, but like you could just go see the movie somewhere else at that point.
Or and you so, could just, I mean, it'll just be a screening at that point, but with no one involved. They're probably going to make the, well, we know what the DGA did in this whole shindig, but they might just make producers show up. Or the DGA will show up to talk, but I don't even know if that's going to be allowed.
A lot of people are trying to stand in unison too. So yeah, it's like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't want to diminish labor solidarity. I'm just saying,
of course,
that they're going to be like, here's executive producer Kathleen Kennedy to talk about our latest studio offerings.
They're like, we have nothing else.
Kathleen Kennedy on stage doing a little tap dance routine, like ha-cha-cha, ha-cha-cha-cha.
It's giving like Jenna Maroney, like, don't look at the fire over there.
I know. I wonder what Abigail Disney has to say about all this. Keep going.
So one of the award and publicity strategists said to Variety on obviously this entire thing happening with specifically TIFF said, why would we spend all this money to send the directors and producers to just these expensive places? It's not worth it for them. So honestly, it seems like with the next like few weeks, we're going to watch this like completely fall apart unless something is done immediately. But from other articles we've seen and just like general, like it seems like not even really hearsay. It's really a lot of different places are talking about it. The studios are just waiting for everyone to basically be bankrupt and then accept whatever shitty deal they offer them, which is not new. That's what we've seen a million times before. But let's get into this exact list of what people are not allowed to do because it's pretty comprehensive.
Abigail Disney, go SAG! Exclamation point, exclamation point.
Our Abigail updates.
Abigail Disney, someone tweets, love the interview from this man was given at the Sun Valley Conference of Billionaires. Abigail Disney in response, the private jets are just the cherry on top of the shit sundae they serve up every year in Aspen. They only talk to each other because no one else on earth agrees with them. I mean, honestly, that's kind of a key. Like, she's like, and I believe that. They're like, we have to have this conference because no one else wants to be our friend on literally planet Earth. Okay.
Literally.
Keep going.
Yeah, so getting this from Variety as well about the SAG strike rules. So basically, this is, let me just get the official copy here. So and get pretty specific. So, except as set forth in the notice to members regarding non-struck work, all covered services and performing work under the TV/theatrical contracts must be withheld, including but not limited to. And before I get into it real quick, can you define non-struck work? Exactly what that means.
Wait, say that one more time.
Non-struck work.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, isn't that like when they're actually like producing the work itself?
Oh, non-struck work just means work that hasn't been affected by the strike.
Okay, that's my thought. Okay. Yeah, so again, basically, including but not limited to principal on-camera work, such as acting, singing, dancing, performing stunts, piloting on-camera aircrafts, puppeteering, performance capture, or motion capture work. Specific principal off-camera work also includes ADR/looping, TV trailers and promos and theatrical trailers, voice acting, singing, narration, including audio descriptive services, except as services may be covered by another collective bargaining agreement referred to in the notice to members regarding non-struck work. Also, stunt coordinating and related services, background work, stand-in work, photo and or body doubles, fittings, wardrobe tests, makeup tests, rehearsals, camera tests, scanning, interviews, and auditions, including via self-tape. Obviously, the big one here that we're kind of mostly referring to is promotion of or publicity services for work under the TV/theatrical contract, such as tours, personal appearances, interviews, conventions, fan expos, festivals, for-your consideration events, panels, premieres or screenings, award shows, junkets, podcast appearances, social media, studio showcases, and then also referring to negotiating and or entering into or consenting to agreements to perform covered services in the future, any new agreements related to merchandising connected to a covered project, and as well the creation and use of digital replicas, including through the reuse of prior work. Also performing on a trailer for a struck production or other ancillary content connected to a struck production.
Yeah.
It's like basically every single element regarding to filmmaking, producing, and PR you cannot do. And obviously this is already affecting some of the biggest premieres of the year. I mean, Barbie did just have their premiere last week, so they thankfully kind of avoided this by a very close margin. But obviously the movie is still not out yet to general audiences. So there's probably a billion events coming up with Barbie and all the actors in it that they now are going to have to walk out of or not show up to. And of course, we immediately already saw the Oppenheimer premiere. It just happened the other day. And in preparation for this, some of the main stars in the movie, like Cillian Murphy, Florence Pugh, Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., Rami Malek, they all, basically left the premiere right after. And Christopher Nolan was basically, you know, in support of that. Was like, they have to go write their picket signs. Like, it's what you got to do. We also saw, this is just a funny thing, Jamie Lynn Spears is now not allowed to promote Zoe 102 or season 3 of Sweet Magnolias because of the strike. And she made this video. I'm not going to play it, but we'll have a link to it because it's just long and rambly. But you can tell she's like so pressed that she can't promote this.
Well, so she's never actually had to make a real living. She's lived off of her sister. So it would make sense she's mad that the first actual job she's ever had to have in her literal adult life is being taken away from her.
And I'm sorry, no amount of promo is going to have anyone watch that Zoe 102 garbage.
No, you are dead on arrival, okay? Go
the concept of that.
Like the rest of us, Jamie Lynn, okay? I'm sorry.
Get a real job, Jamie Lynn.
Jamie. We contribute probably the same amount to society. So if I'm applying to Target, you should also be applying to Target, I think. Sorry.
You know, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's not funny.
And again, just to be clear, guys, I'm not diminishing Target. I proudly make $25,000 a year. I'm saying that, Jamie, welcome to what it is like.
Welcome to real life.
To not live off the enslavement of your family members. How about that? That's what I mean to say. I'm not diminishing Target workers, as we have been friends with and have been those people also frequently in our life. And in my case, I'm still.
What is kind of funny,
Target, by the way, I'm just using Target as an example.
Right. It's like funny and not funny at the same time. But like she says in the video, again, we'll have it linked because it's like 3 minutes long. Yeah. She's in the middle of it. Like, well, I get my health care, you know, through SAG. So like, obviously I have to, you know, support this because I don't use my health care. But funny, you know, what's depressing about the whole thing is you have to make more than $25,000 a year to qualify for the health care that the union provides. And something around like 80%+ of people in the union don't get that health care because they don't make any money. So it's like, girl, it's fucked up. Okay, wait. Funny enough, based on what we were talking about earlier with the flop of this fucking Flash movie, even though obviously that's what DC Comics, not Marvel, the Flash, so adjacent but similar. Bob Iger basically has stated that he wants to pull back on Star Wars and Marvel content.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So getting this from NME, Disney CEO Bob Iger said the company will be pulling back on creating new Star Wars and Marvel content. The announcement comes off the back of the company's attempt to cut costs, having seen a number of their recent films from Marvel to animation underwhelm at the box office. Iger told CNNBC on July 13th, quote, you pull back not just to focus, but also as part of our cost containment initiative, spending less on what we make and making less. Iger said that many of the decisions were made to prop up the company's flagship streaming service, Disney Plus, to attract more customers. He also said that on an influx of new Marvel content, both on the big and small screens, has, quote, diluted focus and attention. He also says, quote, it has not been in the television business at any significant level. And not only did they increase their movie output, but they ended up making a number of TV series. Mm. Frankly, it diluted focus and attention. LOL. Disney, as we've talked about many times as pod, has been systematically removing content from Disney Plus in recent months in an attempt to cut costs with through the kind of royalty kind of exemption that people
I'm reading this now. Yeah.
Yeah. And Zaslav has been doing the same with HBO.
Fuck you, Zaslav. Fuck you. Yeah.
And he just,
I hope everyone also said fuck you too.
Even new shows such as the Willow sequel series and The World According to Jeff Goldblum, which just premiered like I think weeks ago, have already been pulled off the app to reduce cost cutting. So according to Variety, Disney targeted $3 billion in savings for 2023 and will take a reduction of $1.5 billion to $1.8 billion later this year for the loss of value and content developed for Hulu and Disney Plus to draw new members. Iger also said, this is like the most corporate pilled shit you can ever say, this is part of the maturation process as we grow into a business that we have never been in. It's critical we rationalize the volume of content we're creating and what we're spending to produce our content. Our legacy platform enables us to expand our audiences and often augment our potential streaming success, while at the same time allowing us to amortize our content cost across multiple windows. I've never heard the word amortize. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. It basically means to just to write off a production. But I'm literally like, what is the goal of this company? Yeah. What is the goal of Disney at this point? Like so creatively, way,
to amortize is to gradually write off the initial cost of an asset over a long period of time.
Yeah.
So like if something costs you $1 million, by amortizing it, you're going to slowly try to find a way to basically not pay $1 million and get that $1 million back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no, studio. But it's what they call studio accounting, where they're like, oh, this movie that we made that costs, that like made us like $50 billion. And that, I don't think that's a real number. I'm just saying words. Yeah. They're like, oh God, we actually lost $200 billion on it. So that other $150 billion, don't ask us where it went. We lost it. Sorry, we can't pay you guys. And that happens at all levels of the industry. The Men in Black guy just tweeted about this too, where he's like never made any money off of Men in Black because every year when he's supposed to get his residuals, the studio sends him this complex legal paperwork that's like, we actually lose money on Men in Black every year, so we actually can't pay you any of your residuals for that film, even though literally I think Men in Black is the movie, like the Will Smith Men in Black.
Oh, like the original.
I don't know if that's the original.
Yeah, that is like the first one.
Is it the first
one? Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've made a sequel since then. I haven't seen them, but I remember the original very well.
Okay, no. I just wasn't sure if it was like, oh, no, you know what I was thinking of? It was based on a comic book. I thought it was based on an older movie.
Yeah. No,
so yes, the 1997 Men in Black with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. And it was written by Ed Solomon. Ed has like not seen any of that money. And every year they like get him this, you know, basically paperwork that's like, just so you know, we lose money on this. Sorry. We lose it. We don't get it. We have
it's
no money.
It's all studios do is just off. We have no money. Every single piece but of like, the cost.
Isn't Men in Black literally the one movie I feel like all Americans have seen?
Have seen?
Like,
yes, absolutely.
Not just have seen, but have seen.
Like 100 times.
Hundreds of times.
Oh my God. It's still funny, that scene where they like open up the alien. It's like that. They open up the guy and that little alien's in the control.
Yeah, no film school has an article about this, that Men in Black is still in the red almost 30 years later.
That is, how does this happen? How does this happen? Like,
no, I know.
Explain to me the monopoly money of it all.
Studio accounting. And they're all obviously in with the people that make the laws that allow them to do this anyways. So, like, you can't even just tell the government, oh, they're stealing this money, because, like, California benefits from this arrangement also, right? They benefit from this. It gets people a lot of money in coffers, politically speaking, to allow this to happen in Hollywood. Yeah. Okay. Moving on from the SAG strike. Did you see, well, not moving on. Can I quickly play Fran Drescher's speech?
Oh yeah. Feel free.
They can, when I play it, we hear it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as you share your screen.
Sure. Okay, cool.
It came with great sadness that we came to this crossroads, but we had no choice. We are the victims here. We are being victimized by a very greedy entity. I am shocked by the way the people that we have been in business with are treating us. I cannot believe it, quite frankly. How far apart we are on so many things. How they plead poverty, that they're losing money left and right when giving hundreds of millions of dollars to their CEOs. It is disgusting. Shame on them. They stand on the wrong side of history at this very moment. The entire business model has been changed by streaming, digital, AI. This is a moment of history that is a moment of truth. If we don't stand tall right now, we are all going to be in trouble. We are all going to be in jeopardy of being replaced by machines and big business. Who cares more about Wall Street than you and your family? You cannot change the business model as much as it has changed and not expect the contract to change too. We're not going to keep doing incremental changes on a contract that no longer honors what is happening right now with this business model that was foisted upon us. What are we doing? Moving around furniture on the Titanic? It's crazy. So the jig is up, AMPTP. We stand tall. You have to wake up and smell the coffee. We are labor and we stand tall and we demand respect and to be honored for our contribution. You share the wealth because you cannot exist without us. Thank you.
Queen. Okay, well, I mean, let me not go there. Let me not say queen. let's not look up what Fran thinks about the vaccine. Like, let's just place that to the side.
Or Israel.
Yeah, let's place that to the side. Yeah. Now, what I
but
think
she is
here,
absolutely correct in this.
Do we have anything else? Do you want to keep going? I mean, we have some stuff.
Yeah, we have last few things and we can head out of here. The Britney Spears memoir, The Woman in Me, gets a release date and the cover is shown.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. So, I mean, we've obviously been talking about this forever as it's been coming up. So it's not like a huge update with this necessarily. Yeah. But yeah, official title will be The Woman in Me. It'll be released on October 14th by Gallery Books, which is a Simon Schuster publication. They describe it as, quote, a brave and astonishingly moving story about freedom, fame, motherhood, survival, faith, and hope. Obviously, this was in a huge bidding war we talked about last year. They ended up paying about $15 million for the rights. On the book's webpage, Gallery writes, quote, in June 2021, the whole world was listening as Britney spoke in open court. The impact of sharing her voice, her truth, was undeniable, and it changed the course of her life and the lives of countless others. The Woman in Me reveals for the first time her incredible journey and the strength at the core of one of the greatest performers in pop music history. Written with the remarkable candor and humor, Spears' groundbreaking book illuminates the enduring power of music and love and the importance of a woman telling her own story on her own terms at last. I'm so excited. I mean, this will be like a month of podcasting, I think, this book, like when it finally comes out. Like, there's going to be, I can't imagine how many things are going to be revealed and or explained. I have a link to the cover here. It's also in the Deadline article, obviously. I think you were talking about this in the Discord while I was out, though, about like the outfit and everything and like where the photo kind of comes from, because it's an older photo, obviously, of Britney. Do you know anything about it that you want to talk about?
The book itself?
No, the book cover. Yeah, like the photo they're using of Britney.
Oh, it is Herb Ritz. For those of you who don't know who Herb Ritz is, Herb Ritz is one of the most legendary fashion photographers like of all time. Mm-hmm. It is really, really good. They're unreleased photos from, I think, 2001. I think Herb was active between the 80s and 90s. He died in 2002. So he died a year after these photos were taken.
I was going to say it had to be then. Yeah.
He was 50 when he died, I believe.
Wow. Oh, that's tragic.
He is known for like some of the most iconic photos like ever taken. You know, a lot of people will know his Madonna photos. A lot of people will know his like supermodel photos. The Madonna photos that I am thinking of in particular is the one of her in the leather jacket. You know, she's like bent up towards the sky and she has the short blonde hair. Mm-hmm. That was Herb Ritz, black and white. Or I think that one is, I would call it sepia. Yeah. And then the other photo that people will probably most know Herb Ritz for is there is a photo of the supermodels naked. And they are all like, there's five of them and they're all kind of like clutching each other and holding each other close. Naomi Campbell is in there. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? It's Stephanie, Cindy, Christy, Tatiana, and Naomi. I was like, who was in it? I know it was Cindy, Christy, and Naomi. And then I think it was Stephanie Seymour and then Tatiana as well was in it. But anyways, I'll send you the photo so you can see what I'm talking about. This photo again was shot a year before he died and
that's crazy.
Unreleased. And what I think is interesting about this photo is, the book cover,
this one. Yeah,
you know, it's
exactly
her
what I thought of.
Naked. And there is something, I don't know if it's a word that is common, but it is a word that everyone uses when it comes to Britney, is like the deflowering era.
Oh God. Yeah. I know what you mean though.
So Britney was obviously not an adult for a significant chunk of her first career, or her first era of her career. You know, obviously she came up from Disney and then I believe her first album was when she was 16.
Yeah, I think so.
Britney Spears' age first album.
Yeah, because she was like 12 in the Mickey Mouse Club.
She was a month into being 17, but she worked on it when she was 16. Damn. Okay, I was right. Look at me. That's like this trapper keeper of a brain. So anyways, and that was in 1999. So 2001 was when she turned 18. Let me see what actually she did for her 18th birthday. No, am I right? 2001. No, she was 20 in 2001. I'm trying to think when she would have turned. When did Britney turn 18? 1999 she did. Okay. But anyways. I just want to make sure I got that right. I was like, again, can't do math in my head. But this was basically like right after she had turned 18, these photos were taken. And it is in this era known as like the deflowering era where Britney was this like, you know, child star. She was like young and naive and like it was all like very high school innocent and like the just the slight hint of like oh, mm-hmm. I'm like growing and maturing into a woman. And then we saw what happened once she became 18. And that it's this photo in particular, I think, is during a very significant time in Britney's life and career when the media was eagerly hounding her for nudity and sexuality and what it is that she looked like, and who she was having sex with and what she wore, what she dressed, who she was like friends with at all, what her music sounded like. And the deflowering refers to, well, it's most notable for a TMZ headline that was like, Britney deflowered ? And it was like, was this the age that she first had sex? And that was the thing that would get brought up constantly is when's Britney Spears going to lose her virginity, mm-hmm. you know, virginity deflowering. That's where that comes from. And so I just think it's like a really significant photo to choose. I mean, she could have chosen so many photos. She could have chosen so many photographers, but Herb Ritts shot the supermodels, one of the greatest living photographers in history, and has left like an indelible mark on fashion. And the fact that they are unreleased is pretty significant too, because, you know, when it is like a historical figure like Herb Ritts, you know, it's not just like a unreleased photo of Britney. It's like an unreleased Herb Ritts photo of Britney. And then it is from this specific era where she was set up to fail by everybody. I mean, she was long set up to fail, I think, but this era specifically was like the entire world kind of turned on her, and turned on her in a significant way that allowed the media to capitalize on this exploitation of her that would come about in 2007, you know? So it's interesting and significant and really powerful to me. And I'm just can't wait to read the book. We're obviously going to have a whole episode about it. We'll have to have Bible Girl back.
Well, like I said, it's like going to be a month of podcasting about this book. Yeah. I have to imagine. There's just going to be so much. I'm so excited.
Sorry. I love fashion photographers. Was that too long-winded?
No, I know.
I think I just,
that's why I wanted to ask you about it. I knew you'd have like
responding to myself. I'm sorry.
That's why it's literally why I asked you. I was like, I know there's going to be more and more about it that I wouldn't have no idea unless someone like you could tell me.
I just wanted to make sure. One of my favorite Herb Ritts photos is actually of George Michael for Interview Magazine, but that's another
thing. For another day.
That's another day.
Last thing we have here, I just want to bring up because it's starting to get really confusing. I'll just read two headlines. There's not even really much to say about what these are, but these are the two headlines. Andy Cohen confirms Kyle Richards and Mauricio Umansky's split will be addressed on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Literally, all this comes down to is him saying on his radio show on SiriusXM, quote, I want to say that I think I will be that this will be included in the next season of Beverly Hills in some way, shape, or form. When a listener who called and asked about the situation, and he said, that's all I will say. Obviously referring to when Scandoball broke, they had already finished filming Vanderpump and then brought the cameras back up. And then this is another headline that came out. Garcelle Bouvet says Kyle Richards is, quote, hanging in there after Mauricio Umansky split. And also quite literally all this comes down to is Garcelle being interviewed at this premiere of a Netflix show in New York saying, quote, I just texted her and said, are you okay? And she replied, I didn't expect a reply. Oh, no, she said, just hanging in there, that she's okay and just hanging in there. That's like all that she had to say about it. And what's confusing me is obviously, we talked about this last week, how Kyle had posted, her and Mauricio said, we're not getting a divorce. These rumors are crazy, blah, blah. We love each other, and posted pictures of them together for the fourth. But then like quite literally every headline since then, and all anyone's been saying is that the split is real and happening and it's coming. So I don't get what's going on. It's very confusing to me. I don't know what really to say about it, but I'm just, I'm literally just as confused as anyone else, I guess.
It's a thing.
And he's like, we'll see what happens. And I'm like, I guess we will.
Guess we will.
Very weird. Very weird. Oh, wait. Also, I forgot to add this. Again, this is a weird week because I was out most this weekend. We had a lot of stuff going on. But did you see that Dorit and PK's like basement flooded or something?
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately.
I'm sure that'll get a whole episode.
Yeah.
Well.
Well.
Do you have anything? Have you seen Crappy Lake yet? I was going to watch it, but didn't have the time this morning.
Yeah, Heron and I watched it after Beyonce. We got home, ordered Wawa, and turned on Crappy Lake.
That's a magical and it's experience.
Not good.
Oh, really? I can
see why they held it for so long. They were probably trying to make something usable out of a really garbage show. And it confirms my opinion.
Oh, that's a shame.
Once again, that this was the correct choice to filter out that cast because they're just... Luann is good. Sonia is good. It's just, it's a nothing show. It's like nothing. It has nothing interesting to say.
It's not even funny.
It's recycled jokes from the two of them.
Oh, God.
It's like them doing Luann and Sonia. And it's like, we've already seen Luann and Sonia, right? And the whole thing is like, we're like Laverne and Shirley. And it's like, okay, but if you have to say you don't get to say you're like Laverne and Shirley. Luann, you're doing tour performances at the Live Casino in Philadelphia, in South Philly, okay? I don't want to hear it from you that you're just like Laverne and Shirley on a direct-to-streaming show where they can't even say the word Real Housewives because it's a Peacock show. It's not Bravo. So, like, they'll say, oh, we're famous for, like, being on this, for being on a show. But
Bravo's
show.
Owned by NBC.
They're
so like,
they're like, there's a show we used to do. I think they didn't think it was going to go to Bravo first. And so they didn't say Bravo and they didn't say Housewives.
Oh,
they
weren't sure
they
just
were
going
to have the copyright to it. Yeah.
Oh, Lord mercy.
Because they were, maybe they weren't, they weren't assuming it was going to get sold to Peacock.
So you're saying skip on all of it, honestly.
If you want to watch it, the episodes are 20 minutes long. I'm not exaggerating. They are literally 20 minutes. Exactly. Oh, including Lord. Credits and beginning sequence.
It's basically just a clip show.
It's like a YouTube show.
I was about to say, like, they should just put it on YouTube or TikTok or something.
Yeah, it's not good. And the lighting in it is weird.
Oh,
the confessional
my God.
Lighting looks like it was shot on an iPhone. It's really bad.
It probably was. Oh, that's so upsetting. That's so upsetting. Well, at least we have the new Roni this weekend. At least, like, they'll have money to budget. I hope so.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. And if it's not good, then we can just successfully say goodbye to the Real Housewives of New York until Gen Z gets old enough to be in their 30s and divorced.
Wow.
And
isn't that like, well, I guess they're not that young.
No, but that's like another 15 years.
Yeah, we gotta wait a bit longer. Okay. Well. Shame. I gotta catch up on so much Love Island today.
I have like 5-6 days of Love Island to catch up.
Oh my God. Yeah. Same. I caught up on Sunday, the movie night. You haven't seen movie night yet.
I've seen anything since they got back from Casa Amor.
Oh, the movie night's good.
Virgil had COVID. So I was like, I wasn't going to watch without them.
Valid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, goodbye. I'm kidding.
Get the fuck out of here.
3, 2, 1.
Hi.
I'm on vacation right now from the main podcast, and it's been kind of weird because every time we come to record this podcast, I'm like, I have a podcast. And then I'm like, what am I supposed to say to a podcast? And then I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, damn, I look really good. And I'm in this really cute Renaissance hat. And I'm like, damn, I look really good in the Renaissance hat too. And then I'm looking at Lawson and he's listening to me express my thoughts out loud for the very first time because I'm a Pisces and I don't tell anyone anything that's going on in my brain. And he's looking at me like I'm having a stroke. And I probably am having a stroke, but it's 300 degrees in my room and I couldn't think of anything or characters to do. So I just decided to do a stream of consciousness about what I'm feeling right now in this exact moment. Okay.
Work.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, I'll